I've chosen the parable for today, the kingdom parable for today that we're going to investigate, partly because it comes next in order, but partly because it's the other one which Jesus actually explains. In the first case, the disciples simply ask him why he spoke to people in parables. Remember Matthew 13 and verse 10. This time, they actually come to him and request of him that he explain this parable to them. He doesn't normally do this. And one of the reasons is that the entire method of teaching by parables is calculated to sort of arrest the attention of the hearer and then to force the hearer to engage in the process enough to decide for himself what this meant and how it would impact his life. Now, both of these parables have the one last week and this one, have one thing in common, and it's that they both involve the garden or the field. How many of you have ever, while walking behind a lawnmower or down weeding a garden or with a rake handle in your hand, attending to the chores that either are related to bringing about growth or dealing with the results of growth, have ever thought of a lesson? All right, I see that you guys really are mindless garden workers.
That's my relaxation.
All right, okay. What Debbie thinks is, I'm glad Barney's out doing that. Okay. One of the things that I can't help but notice in this passage is that Jesus uses illustrations that are from that circle. What does that tell you about him?
All right,
he's dealing with what the people that he's teaching would understand, but doesn't it also tell you that it's something about how he has lived? He has been as his part of his identifying with human experience, he has lived in a situation where he has worked in the garden or in the field, or he has dealt with everyday life, or he has watched people while they are going about everyday life, and he has seen the spiritual principles that are also true in natural life, if I can define it that way. And you know, there are a lot of things about how God deals with us spiritually that are also true in the natural world. I think of the principle in Galatians 6 that whatever a man sows, that he'll also reap. And that, of course, is true in the natural world, but it's also true, I think, to some degree in social life. You get from people generally what you invest in people, and it's certainly true in spiritual sense, in that God won't be mocked, that all of us answer to him for what we've done with our lives. Now, in this case, this next kingdom parable is one that gets my attention on several levels, and I'm going to ask you some of what you think this morning before I tell you what I think about this, and I want you to pretend while we're reading that you're in the crowd that is mentioned in verse 2 of chapter 13, and that you're hearing this illustration or this story for the first time, and you're trying to decide what it means. I want you to think about how would I take this, and what would I think the point of this is, and what would I understand from this? Let's read first off verses 24 through 30, which is the little parable itself. All right, Jan, do you mind to read for us?
He presented another parable to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went away. But when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. And the slaves of the landowner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' And he said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' And the slaves said to him, 'Do you want us to then go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, lest while you're gathering up the tares, you may root up the wheat with them. Allow both to grow together until the harvest in time of harvest, until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather up the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them up, but gather the wheat into my barn.'"
All right. Now, this is a, as every farmer or gardener knows, this is a very practical illustration. And when you look at it, what gets your attention? What point do you notice just in listening to what's said there? And why do you think Jesus is telling this story?
I think it would be hard for us to sit there and hear this for the first time and realize what he's talking about. I mean, I've read this and studied this and so forth, so I can't clear my mind of what I've already conceived in my own mind.
All right. Boil it down to its simplest things, the contrast or the comparison that he's making. Remember, we usually say that a parable is something in which a spiritual point is learned through either comparison or contrast with some earthly situation or earthly story. What at the very basis of it is the tool that this parable uses? What's the illustration it uses?
Good and bad.
All right, good and bad, and good and bad, in what relationship?
Having to live together.
All right. Good and bad growing up together. All right. Now, that's the first part of this, the first point of this that's going to be important is these two things grow up together. Now, what is the problem in this? Norma?
Those weeds in my fault. Those weeds are going to make seed. Next year you're going to have way more weeds if you don't get them out.
All right, so you just said the problem is, how do you get them out? All right, how do you get them out without destroying them? It's one thing if you have a garden in which you have nice straight rows and you can walk on either side of them and you can pull weeds out from in between and you can hoe in between the rows. At least I understand you can. I wouldn't know. But you could hoe in between the rows and you can get all that out. It's another thing, though, if you're dealing with a field of grain where it's just sowed, not in rows, but it's a field, and if you go out and you try to separate, then you're either A, going to trample down the field, or B, you're going to uproot the other the good stuff you've got growing there too, and still see, not separating them isn't an option. At some point, it has to be done. So that's the part that I see. And so, what else do you notice?
Well, so what you're saying is, by them being mixed in together at the beginning, you can't tell which is the good and which is the bad, and that's why he wants them to grow up.
All right. Right at the beginning, you wouldn't be able to tell. This is a wheat field, I think we're together, or a grain field, we're together, and it's had good seed sowed in it by the owner of the property. He has, of course, seen to that. But then there is the tares the seed for it, or the weeds, as I have it up here, which I understand a lot of the writers will say is probably the seed of a plant called darnel, it's described as a wheat-like plant, meaning that similar kinds of looking seeds, but also when the plant begins to grow in its earliest stages, the difference is not obvious. You can't tell until it's already grown enough that it's a problem, you see. And I noticed that. Now, what else do you notice about this? All right, there finally comes a time, there is a time when separation can be made that protects and saves the wheat and which gets rid of the problem that the destructive problem that would have been there, the unusable or the unworthy part of this. Now, you can see those things. Now, having laid the foundation like that, or having recognized the main part of the illustration here, the next question is to ask, all right, what is being compared to that situation here?
The judgment.
All right, the judgment is, I think, in view here, but notice in the beginning of it, what's being compared to it?
Kingdom.
All right, that's true. Jan says the kingdom of heaven. Now, usually when we use that phrase, we would think I think most people do. We think of heaven itself. But what aspect of the kingdom of heaven must this passage be talking about? Must this parable be talking about?
Church.
All right, in this world, the kingdom of heaven, in its existence in this world, is compared to that which we have seen, and the necessity of the judgment is the point of this. The timing of the judgment, when this separation occurs, or being the time when the separation occurs, that is the sort of the reassurance that is offered in this passage, it seems to me. But that then raises the question, why is Jesus telling people this parable? And do you notice anything now in common with the previous parable that we studied about the kingdom of heaven? Remember?
Definitely an enemy.
All right, there is an enemy at work, and the kingdom of heaven being present in this world will not mean that the enemy will cease his activity. In some ways, he redoubles his activity. That the enemy would not have had to go to the trouble to sow the weeds in the field if the owner of the field didn't have some good seeds out there. So that's one thing you see. All right, now, you notice also that during this whole period of time, while the kingdom of heaven awaits the judgment in which the separation occurs, there is the problem of real grain and counterfeit grain. There is both. All right. Now, why is Jesus teaching this? I mentioned last week that I think a part of the point of the parable of the sower is to tell his disciples, or to make sure they realize, that when they go out and they sow the seed of the kingdom, and some of it falls on the wayside and some of it falls on rocky ground and it sprouts up, it doesn't last, and some falls on thorny ground and it starts growing but it gets choked out, and some falls on good ground. Part of the point is to say to his disciples, do not get discouraged. I assure you that there will be a harvest of good seed. All right. Now, in this case, maybe part of the point is going to be that his disciples need to understand that if they recognize in the in what looks to be the kingdom in the world today, or the church in the world today, there are flaws, there are counterfeits, there's unfaithfulness and so forth. Not to think that somehow or another that the presence of those things caused by the enemy cancels out the value or the vitality of the Lord's kingdom. That there will be a time when the separation will occur and the good seed gets gathered into the Lord's harvest and kept by Him, if I can use the illustration here in that way. Now, does that help? We haven't dealt with all the problems here yet, but does that help to get the general idea in mind? Any other observation to this point you want to make, having just heard the story like the disciples did, but wondering about what the Lord meant? Any other point of comparison that stands out? Yes.
Well, it seems to me in the first parable, he's explaining to them sort of the beginning.
Yeah.
How the word is spread.
All right.
After there's some maturity to it, then these other problems are going to come.
All right, that's a good point. The parable of the sower tells us about how the beginnings of life in the kingdom and so forth, and how it starts out. And now this one is occupied with the growing, the time of the growing, when the growing is occurring and so on. So that's a good way to understand this, maybe. Anybody else?
I noticed here in verse 29, where they asked, do you want us to go and gather them up? And he said, no. That's why you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. To me, that's sort of an important part of it, mm-hmm. because it's saying, be careful, because what you do can be disruptive to the good as well as to the bad.
All right.
How you go about doing something.
Yeah.
Leave the judgment to God.
All right, there is a sense in which the judgment is to be left to the Lord at its time. And there is a sense, as Barney says, in which sometimes our efforts to deal with what we see to be the bad can be hurtful to the good. Now, historically speaking, one of the questions that has been brought up in the discussion of this parable has been, what about then the church's responsibility to admonish and sometimes even to discipline, where problems of sinfulness are apparent? Well, remember that parables don't undertake to describe every aspect of a problem or situation in one setting. You know, you can see from what Yvonne mentioned a moment ago that these two snapshots are at different times or different situations in the development or the growth of the kingdom. And this parable isn't trying to tell us everything, but it is trying to tell us one important point, and it's what Barney mentioned, what was just mentioned there. Okay, Russ?
And I'll get ahead of us just a little bit.
Okay.
The field is the world and not just the church.
All right.
So we can have discipline in the church.
All right, that's a good point.
Not violent.
All right, it's a good one. Since you brought it up, let's read what the Lord said in explaining this. And what Russ said is a crucial part of understanding this. This is the kingdom of heaven growing within the world between the time when the Lord established it and when the judgment occurs. So this is, in this situation, what Barney says, observed there, is extremely important. Let's read verses 36 through 43 now. In our passage here, Elizabeth, you want to read that one for us?
And he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him, saying, "Explain to us the parables of the weeds in the field." And he answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the close of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear."
All right. Now, there are many phrases in that passage that certainly get our attention and make us think. At least they do me, and I'm sure with you as well. The beauty of this is that we have the Lord's own explanation of what he meant, and that means that there is some value here that will attach itself to our use of all of the parables, because we have some idea now on how the Lord wants us to go about these things. Now, let's look at the pertinent details here that will help us. Now, in the first place, the one who sows the good seed, as was mentioned in verse 24, is identified. Back there it said, "The kingdom of heaven is compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field." And now Jesus tells us who that man, who he means for us to understand when we think of that man. Who is it?
Jesus.
That's himself, the Son of Man. The world is his field, and he is sowing good seed in his field, and that's what the kingdom of heaven is about. Now, in verse 38, we learn what the field is. The world. And this is important for what Russ mentioned a moment ago. This is not talking about how the church now deals with itself. This is talking about how the church goes about living in the world, and how the citizens of the kingdom, how the Lord's people respond to the situation when they see that while we're living in the world, there is good and there is also a lot of bad going on. And it will look to us sometimes like the bad is outgrowing the good, won't it? Yeah, it will. And so this is a very practical thing in that way. Now, the good seed that he is sowing here, and this is where the illustration changes from what we had before. The good seed back there, we think of sowing the message, the gospel message, or the word of the Lord, and so forth. But that's not, in this case, what he means. What's the good seed here?
Individuals.
All right, it is the individual people whom he has won to himself, that he's redeemed or purchased for himself. The good seed is the children of the kingdom. All right. So there are, in this world, children of the kingdom. We learn from passages like Colossians 1, verses 12, 13, and 14, that these are people who've been delivered from the power of darkness and translated into the kingdom of God's dear Son. They're people who are ruled by the Lord himself, in other words. They are people whose citizenship is in heaven, as Philippians 3 says it. So this is the good seed. Now, on the other hand, who are the weeds? They're not just, in this case, weeds are not just wrong ideas or wrong thoughts or problems that are resulting of evil. The parable, the Lord's meaning is more specific. The weeds are
actions. people.
All right, they're people who are, if I could say it this way, who are children of disobedience. Ephesians 2 uses that phraseology to describe them. They are, here they are sons of the evil one, and they are in the world, the field, in this field, because of what? Because the evil one, he has his representatives in this field as well. So what we have is now a conflict not just between tares and wheat, or weeds and wheat, and not just between the children of the kingdom and the sons of the evil one, but between the owner of the field, who's the son of man, and the enemy of the owner, who is Satan himself. All right, so that lets us see the situation. Now, while these are growing up, a lot of the children of the kingdom can recognize and the need for something to be done about the sons of the evil one, and can wish that they were not growing up and spoiling the crop, so to speak. But it lies outside the power of the children of the kingdom to do away with the presence of the seed of the evil one without doing great harm to the crop. If I can say it that way, Russ.
So before we get away from the sowing,
okay,
is it going too far to say somebody who is teaching something that resembles but is not quite the gospel and doctrine of Christ is doing the work of the evil one?
You have to ask yourself, how does the evil one sow the seed? Doesn't he do it by deceiving and misleading? I mean, there's not another way to do it. He gains followers for himself by being the father of lies and by tempting, misleading, ruining and every other way. So I don't think that's too much to say. I think that's sort of implied in the story himself.
Seems to put a lot of responsibility on us to make sure that what we're teaching is right.
It does. It puts a great amount of responsibility on us in that way, and because of who the Lord is, not simply because of who we are, but because of who the Lord is. Now, you notice that at the middle of verse 39, the Lord skips all the way over the present circumstance in which these two are growing up together, and he describes what the harvest is. Now, he mentioned the harvest in verse 30, let both grow together until the harvest. And at the harvest, I'll tell the reapers to gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, and then gather the wheat in my barn. Now, we know from verse 39, the last half of the verse, what the harvest is. What's the harvest?
End of the world,
the close of the age, the time of the judgment, however you want to say it. The reapers turn out to be his angels. If you read 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 6 and following, you notice the Lord appears in flaming fire with his mighty angels, taking vengeance on those who know not God and obey not the gospel. And that would be the idea that is here. Then he says that as the weeds are gathered and burned, it'll be at the end of the age, and the Son of Man will send his angels, and notice what they gather out of his kingdom, out of his world. What are the things that they gather out? Verse 41.
Sheep and goats.
Alright, and offend in the sense of causing sin or causing people to stumble and fall, and then the lawbreakers, the transgressor, the rebellious who ignores completely what God's will is, and then this gets thrown into the fiery furnace. Now, please observe something here. The fiery furnace that is mentioned, oddly enough to me, gets taken literally. And please be careful to understand what I'm saying. I'm not suggesting there's not a judgment and there's not a hell and so forth. I'm talking about what our concept of those things is. In this situation, we recognize there is a field, there is seed, there are weeds, there's a harvest and all that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden we want to make the fiery furnace to be the literal thing. Please recognize what the Lord is saying. There comes to be a separation, and that which has caused ruin in among the children of the kingdom will be destroyed or will be done away with. That's what he is teaching. That's what he's saying in this parable here. And then that causes grief at the end of verse 42, the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. That causes grief among those who are the children of the evil one. And that's they recognize the disaster in the way they have approached life, and they're brought out for who they really are, and the corruption and the counterfeit nature of what they've lived for is brought right out in the open. And then verse 43 says the righteous, look at the way this is described, and ask yourself why he is this still a part of the same illustration. The righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of the Father. Now, that this part of it was not said back in verse 30. So what is his point in this? What kept the righteous from shining like the sun before this? The weeds in the field. And their terrible influence and their terrible results. And the weeds in the field representing apparently the children of the evil one and the things that they do that cause people to sin and the way in which they represent the law breaking against God. All right. How do you gardeners, if there were any of you in here who ever thought of a lesson while you were mowing your grass or weeding your garden or whatever, what would it be like to be behind your own lawnmower pushing along and there not be any crab grass anywhere before you? I wouldn't know, but ask yourself. And what's it look like to you when you've worked your way all the way down through the rows in your garden, you've pulled up every weed, the vegetables are getting ripe, and you can look back on it, and it's just all, what's that like for you? What would that be like for you?
When I think about my flower garden, when I get the weeds out,
all right.
The flowers
do. All right. Great illustration. Isn't that a great illustration of what Jesus is saying here? That's what is, you see what we look for then. We remain, as the Lord's people, we remain reassured that, look, we're not God. It's not our job to try to weed out from the world everything that we don't that we know is not appropriate. Our job is to be true to the Lord and to live for Him and to engage in the mission He has given for us. We remain convinced that there will come a time when the beauty and the value of the cause for which we have lived will be apparent. And we try, therefore, to be ready for the harvest, for what the Lord will do in the harvest. That's kind of what I see from this parable. Now, any other point that any of you want to make in the 2 minutes just passed? Okay, Russ.
I think in that last verse, he's given us a clue of what we get more of in like 1 Corinthians 15, the body that's sown in dishonor is raised in glory. And,
All right.
There's a little more to it. I think he kind of leaves the parable just a little bit and gives us a little more.
All right. That may be true. Anybody else?
Well, I think you can coexist with the weeds, and we do. But at the end, those will be dealt with.
Yeah. It's interesting in both of these parables, in a way, in both of these parables, there has been the idea that there is ultimately a separation or a distinction that that is determined by fruit.
Barney. Some weeds, for a certain period of time, can be beneficial, but the end result is they won't be productive.
All right. And they'll be destructive in the long run, too. All right.
Give us a different perspective on our lives. They can make us stronger as Christians.
All right. Let us be sure that we are growing like good seed, that we are good seed, and not weeds. All right. Thank you guys for being with us today.